It's
called Punch Drunk.
The punches weren't really necessary. Maybe
they were super necessary.
Welcome to episode 95 of the Punch Drunk Podcast, your favorite combat sports podcast hosted by two dudes who can't fight and know way less about fighting than they think they do. I'm your host, Lewis, and joined once again by the man, Jamie. What's going on, brother?
Man, just happy to be here. Just happy to let the people know what I don't know about fighting.
That's it, man. And if you notice anything different today from our usual setups, I'm traveling, so I've got this rinky-dink little computer headset. I'm holed up in the corner of my parents' lounge room here in England. So apologies if you're, you know, if the typical excellent high-level quality that you've come to expect from Punch Drunk isn't quite there this week. But what I can guarantee is the subpar analysis and opinions and takes that you've come to know and love will remain. The takes will flow. And my goodness, we've got so much to talk about on today's episode. Because I don't know if you heard, Jamie, but there's one or two things that have been going on in the UFC in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, last few days.
Oh, that's my goodness.
That's that Mike Perry didn't step in for Dylan Danis. That was what we're...
Right? Before we dive into the fights, we got like this whole YouTuber crossover boxing, whatever you want to call it, is truly it's one of the worst things that's ever been allowed to prosper. And boxing's only got itself to blame, but I don't understand how people pay money and tune in and watch this absolute drivel. But then again, people tune in for WWE and wrestling. So I kind of put it all in the same category of, you know, if you're under the age of 13 years old or, you know, you're not entitled to hold a driver's license because you have some kind of mental disability, then go ahead and enjoy wrestling and Misfits boxing. But apart from that,
it's like reality TV, man. It's like it's almost because they're just hot people in the limelight. People are just going to be attracted to watch it. And there's drama unfolding. It's like obviously like self-created drama that they're funding themselves with, which is like, it's a very good business move. But
they're making a ton of money. The thing is though, like you don't play. And one of these days, someone is going to get seriously hurt. And they obviously don't drug test. They say that they do, but you know, the Paul brothers are juiced up to the gills. Tommy Fury looks like he's on the gas. There was one a few weeks ago, and this guy, I guess he's some kind of like fitness gym influencer, and dude had muscles on muscles on muscles on muscles. And he knocked this sack of milk out in like 11 seconds. I'm like, that someone's going to get a life-altering knockout because they make YouTube videos and they're doing it for the content. It's just a mess.
Yeah, it's all a bit of a mess. And the thing is, because there's so much money being thrown at it, even like, you know, people like Chael Sonnen are saying like the product is fucking astounding. It's like it's done so well, and like congratulations to them all. It's like, but like, I mean, you're really just putting like a really pretty bow tie on a piece of shit.
That's 100%. That's all it is. That's all it is. And it's kidding people to associate it with any sort of high level fighting. And it's just, I don't know, man.
And hey, it is what it is. And if it draws any kind of like positive, like reinforcement towards like, you know, fighter pay and things like that, I like those sort of like positive trickle down effects that could possibly happen. Yeah. But you know, it's just one of these weird timelines, man.
The weirdest people online at the moment are KSI fan accounts, and if anyone running them is over the age of like 15 years old, they need to be put on a watch list immediately, because there's no way that they're getting within 100 feet of schools and not looking at children. it's a race.
Well, let's get back onto some real fights then. Hey, let's wash this out of our mouths and
let's do it. Well, let's have a nice little appetizer, because we've got a huge meaty barbecue of a main event to enjoy.
Meaty Barboza of a main event that just happened, but
we do have Barboza to talk about. And my goodness, the how he survived that first round after Sadiq Youssef just absolutely flogged him was
insane.
I mean, true veteran craftiness and a lack of experience on Youssef's part, and he's going to be absolutely gutted. He threw away the chance to get a first round stoppage over Barboza, but credit to Barboza, man, he's crafty. He did what he needed to do and ended up turning it around and took Sadiq into deep waters where he'd never been, and he drowned him.
Yeah, man, it was stunning to watch, and I was like, because it was so fast this first round for me, I just immediately thought the main event was just going to be over in you know the first minute, and yeah, incredible. He's bobbing, weaving, taking every single strike. You know, Sadiq's obviously seeing that he can fucking end a veteran, someone that he grew up watching, you know, like that he has a huge respect for, and he's about to dominate him in the first round, and then little did he know, friggin' 25 minutes later, he does not get his hand raised. Like, that would, like, he must, like, I can't imagine being that tired, like, you know, like, just, you know, after being, throwing all your energy out in the first round, and then having another friggin' 20 minutes to try and fight one of the most deadly knockout artists.
That's partly on him and his team, though, like, to not have him prepared to have the gas tank to go five rounds. Like, you make sure, and you know he'll learn from it, and he probably won't do anything like that again. But no, Edson Barboza moves up to number 11 now, one spot ahead of Sadiq, and you're like, oh, you know, Edson Barboza versus maybe Giga Chikadze or something. I don't know if that fight's been happened before. I don't think it has. Let's have a look. Let's have a look at old Edson.
Yeah, it did. Lost.
Let's run it back. Let's do that again.
Let's run it back, baby. I feel like Giga's on the way up as well. I feel like Giga's probably going to be taking a higher ranked fight, right? Because he's only lost once, right? He lost against Calvin Kattar.
Yeah, he did have his face rearranged for five rounds, but
I like both of these fighters, but I love Calvin Kattar, so I was like really happy that he just it was such a stonking, because that fight was so heavily favored for Giga, I think. Like, you know, everyone was just like, he's just going to kick him in the fucking liver like he does everyone else, and they'll just fold over like a limp rag. So,
listen, man, a broken clock is right twice a day, and that was one of the times that me, being the metaphorical broken clock, was indeed right. I was pounding the drum for the underdog Calvin Kattar in that fight. So it's rare, but when I get a bet or a call right, we got to shout it out, because
scream into the heavens.
It's a rare thing. So yeah, nice stuff from Edson Barboza. Really, really enjoyed that, and it just shows you these young guys up and coming, and one of them, another perfect example. Adrian Yanez, right? He got his opportunity in his previous outing, and it was against he was fighting I think Rob Font, right? Isn't that who he fought in his
and he
got knocked out, man, and all of a sudden the hype train was derailed, and now that's two TKO losses in a row from a guy who was on like a million fight win streak, undefeated in the UFC, was being talked about as this, like, ooh, will he challenge the top five in such a dangerous division? And now two stoppage losses in a row. This one, his knee got blown out, and all of a sudden, the narrative around Adrian Yanez has gone from serious, like, threat at 135 pounds to, oh yeah, he's a fun fighter, and he's, you know, he interacts with people on Twitter. He's a bit of a fan favorite. But yeah, man, it just shows you cannot sleep on anyone in this division in the top 15.
The fall from grace is it can happen so quickly, and I'll touch back on this on another fight down the card as well. But I mean, like it just Yeah, it's kind of sad to see, like, I mean, because we love watching slick strikers, people with, like, you know, nice hands. Like, it's just like, oh, it's so beautiful to watch. If you, you know, if you, even if you just love boxing, you love any kind of striking, like, it's it is really magical. But then it was literally just like his leg was it was horrifying to watch. It just reminded you of the old school Jose Aldo versus Uriah Faber days,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Or Jose Aldo versus pretty much anyone, where he's slamming those sledgehammers into people's knees and shins and thighs. But what was insane is Yanez didn't attempt to check a kick once. Or
look, actually,
stance, and it was weird, man.
I think once it's happened a couple of times, like, your legs, like, you're in survival mode. The last thing you're going to be trying to do, because, I mean, he's still throwing hands as well. The last thing he's thinking about is, he's like, all right, he's kicked me so many times in a row now, he's probably going to mix it up and throw the hands. Little did he know, one more leg kick's coming through. But I was actually watching, and a lot of them, he did turn his leg in, but his skinny little shin, and I think Martinez's, like, legs are just so conditioned. You see the size of them, the fucking tree trunks.
They're massive legs.
He's a fucking lumberjack just from the waist down. Like, it's all just happening. So I don't know. I think he tried maybe to check some kicks, but it just doesn't look like there was any effect, or like, it, at least Martinez just ran through it, at least until, you know, they just stopped.
Yeah, it was weird. Great game plan from Martinez, and
really, he's going to continue to strive forward as well. He's on a great streak at the moment.
Let's pull up, let's see what's going on in the rankings now. So Martinez has gone up to 11th. So yeah, really impressive performance for him there to move up to 11th in the bantamweight division.
He's got 10 wins in the UFC and 6 in a row. So I mean, who would you want to see for him next?
Man, how old is he? He's only 29 as well. That's insane. That's a great question. Who would I like to see him fight next? I mean, at this point,
Umar Nurmagomedov. Actually, I mean, that would be dope. Umar's probably looking for a top five.
I think he's injured at the moment. Didn't he pull out of a fight with an injury or something? I'm not sure.
Yeah, Umar was supposed to fight Sandhagen, and that never came through.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Martinez versus Rob Font, and I know it's a bit harsh on Rob Font to sort of keep having to defend his position against these young up-and-coming guys, but that's kind of where he is right now, especially after he lost to Corey Sandhagen. Okay, he did that once against Adrian Yanez, and you think, okay, I know he stepped in at short notice. They do it 140 pounds. He fights Corey Sandhagen because of the Umar fight. Umar pulled out with injury, and you go, well, yeah, sorry, Rob. Thanks for stepping in, but now you got to face this up and coming killer who's ranked below you and probably going to take there's every chance he'll take your spot in the rankings at number 8 there. So tough on him, but also it's kind of the UFC's MO. Like, if you're not going up, if you're not winning the opportunities we give you at the top, then you're going to, you know, someone else is going to get that opportunity against you. So, yeah, I think Jonathan Martinez versus Rob Font is probably an ideal fight to make.
Rob Font's fighting Davison Figueiredo December 2nd.
Okay. Oh, yeah, of course he does. Yeah, okay. Then ignore everything I just said.
Well, I mean, just looking at this top 15 of the bantamweight division, it is fucking stacked. It's
ridiculous.
It's insane. Isn't it? I'm like, people are just like, oh yeah, maybe look at the top 5. Oh yeah, but then look at the next 5, and then look at the next 5. I mean, number 15 is Henry Cejudo, for fuck's sake. It's like, and then you got Chris Gutierrez, you got Dominic Cruz, and then and Ricky Simone. Like, it's just, it has to be one of the most stacked divisions for sure. Like, maybe, like, I mean, lightweight's been like such a huge prime thing for a long time. Obviously, a lot of huge names in there. Yeah. But I think we can't sleep on the bantamweight division, man. It's fucking crazy.
I actually
think
if you're power ranking the divisions, bantamweight will probably be the best, then featherweight, and then lightweight maybe. It's crazy. Mm. It's such an unbelievable.
It's all being held down by Alexander Volkanovski.
Yeah, pretty much. He's just managing the whole show. All right. So on the last show, I was like, oh, I can't believe Cameron Simon's an underdog, and then he loses the fight. So, as you know, disclaimer at the top of the show, don't know what we're talking about. Although I will, in my defense, say that Rodriguez is just a piece of shit weight bully.
Yeah. Fuck that.
And he missed weight by like four pounds. Yeah. And it got made a catchweight bout at 140 pounds, which is just absolutely disgraceful. And I think he's missed weight like a bunch of times.
Yeah, he missed weight last time as well. So it's twice in a row.
Yeah, I
this is what I was going to touch back on, actually, exactly this fight. Because you know how we were just saying that Yanez, there's a fall from grace, and that's after two fights. In boxing, it's one fight that your career's done. It's so fucking unfair for someone to come in 4 pounds over the weight limit, not have to cut those last 4 pounds, which is the hardest to cut. And then you just got such a huge advantage. The other person, it's not just 4 pounds of weight they have to understand. It's that 4 pounds of the hardest thing of them being dehydrated for longer, like absolutely destroying their body. The recovery time takes longer. Everything about it.
Yep.
And even just looking at Cameron Simon, I mean, he looks like a skinny little boy, even though he's fucking amazing at what he does. And shocking, he was like, his speed was great, but was he lacking in the power? I wonder fucking why.
Yeah,
it's like,
it's crazy. And I remember now, I'm just pulling through his record, and it's great. Shout out Tapology, because it gives you a little scale if it shows weight problems. And he missed weight on the Contender Series, won his bout, and didn't get a contract. So he went away to like another regional show, won a fight, and then backdoored his way into the UFC. I think he took a fight on short notice. I can't remember. But he gets a win over Paul Rosas Jr., misses weight. And now in his next fight, he misses weight by like a significant amount. And at some point, the UFC is just going to go, nah, screw that. But in the meantime, these guys are getting absolutely screwed, especially someone like Cameron Simon, where he's just not even complete. That's not missing weight. That's choosing to not make weight. That's making a conscious decision and saying, I'm going to back myself and get the win here and feel better in my performance and forfeit some of my purse and get a win over a name. And then hopefully people forget about the weight issues. It's just not on, man. It's unprofessional. It's the first thing you've got to do. It's all part of the process. It's just, I hate it.
Yeah, man. Like you just touched on there, it's like for him, it was a business decision. It's like, all right, so can I get away with it one more time? Like, if I get away with it one more time, sure, I forfeit this percentage of my purse, but it will give me a more ranked opponent next. It will heighten my Instagram followers. It will heighten my business and my name, which is going to make me more money in the long term. So, like, I mean, but you can only, but that ticket can only be fucking, stamped so many times, and he's done it 3 times already in recent history. So, I reckon if he does it again, it's either they increase the how much they take.
Yeah.
Like, maybe there should be like a normal amount, like, you know, for the person that's only missed weight once, it was a bit of an accident, and we use that scale. People that are like constantly doing this sort of stuff, who are constantly trying to be weight bullies, I reckon they should be penalized more. Take 80% of their purse and let them see fucking, you know, if they want to eat a sandwich again. It's like,
or there's consequences in the fight. You take a point away. That's like, if you missed weight, you know, in the once in, you know, in whatever, you come up with a system, either a strike system, which has incremental percentages taken away from your purse. And then if you miss by 3 pounds or whatever percent, you know, 4 pounds, and then you lose a point as well. So if it's a severe miss, like, yeah, okay, weight cuts can go wrong sometimes, and you miss by a pound, and you don't want to ruin a guy's career, you know, over that. But at the same time, if a guy just intentionally chooses to not make weight to try and gain an advantage, and is happy to give away a bit of money, then clearly the deterrent is not strong enough, and they should take a point away. And that completely changes the landscape of the fight if they go down a round in the fight.
Mm-hmm. For sure, man.
Yeah. Mate, I'm very conscious of we want to talk about actually the huge event coming up. We're just, you know, as we said, Terence McKinney knocked out a tomato can in 7 seconds doing Terence McKinney things. So overall, it was an okay fight. It was an okay fight.
Yeah, I mean, it was 20 seconds. Like the fight card itself, I just will say, all the women's fights on this card were bangers. They were all like good, down the line, huge striking fests. It was a good showcase of women's martial arts on this card. Melissa Dixon obviously getting a good win. Emily Ducote just showing that, you know, that great counter striking. And obviously Liz Boa as well, and then maybe the last female fight on the card, the co-main event, maybe was a little bit more of a snooze fest, but everything else was there was stonkers.
Sucked.
Everyone else wanted to be there though, man. It was a good showcase. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, but yeah, that's what I said. Put in two decision merchants in the women's flyweight division up in the co-main event. It's just. Mm-hmm. Come on, what are you doing, matchmakers?
You could have put any of these other two female matchups there, and it would have actually been a fire. Absolutely, I reckon a lot of people just come in for the main card and they skip the prelims. So, you know, anyone who did, they missed out on three absolute stonkers. So, you know, if you want to go back and watch that on the UFC the replays, then I would suggest doing so. It's good stuff. Nice. Plus, you get to see Terence McKinney fucking murder a guy in 20 seconds as well. Which is...
All right, let's talk about what everyone's here to do. Obviously, UFC 294, and what a change up. We got word a few days ago when it all started to break. It was incredible following it on Twitter in real time. Charles Oliveira was going to be out of his bout, and everyone was like, oh, he's pulling out. What's going on? And then the images got released, and he had a 6-inch gash over his head, which just looked horrific. I don't know what he was doing sparring so intensely with elbows and knees at that point of his camp, but anyway, that's the decision he made. And unfortunately, you know, Oliveira's loss is, to be honest, it's everyone's gain. It's Volkanovski's gain. It's Makhachev's gain. It's the fight fans' gain, because oh my goodness, some men talk the talk. Alexander Volkanovski, he certainly walks that walk. And what makes this more insane is that he's recently had a hand surgery. He hasn't been in a proper camp. And he probably knows in his heart of hearts that if he doesn't beat Makhachev this time, that's all she wrote. He will have to move up to lightweight permanently and beat, you know, probably two more guys at 155 pounds, which is not a given considering how badass some of them are. You know, there's Charles Oliveira there, there's Justin Gaethje, both difficult matchups. Poirier, et cetera, right? The list goes on. This is his last opportunity to quote unquote jump the queue and try and make history and do something legacy defining and become one of these legendary double champions. And for him to go, okay, I'm willing to do that on 11 days' notice, is just absolutely insane, man.
Yeah, dude, it's like, just if you're talking about cojones, this man has all of them, every single one of them. Yeah. It's unbelievable, man. And everything you said, man, it's all just so spot on. The guy is basically the pound for pound number one, and he's going in it and doing what real champions do, showcasing that any man, anywhere, anytime, I'm gonna be there, I'm gonna be balls deep, and I'm going to, but just 11 days notice to fight the toughest motherfucker on the planet is just like 11 days notice for any fight. Like I'd struggle to fight like a strong homeless man on the street in 11 days notice. Like, just fuck me. Like, it's wonderful to see. And yeah, I think the card itself has just exploded in terms of star value.
Which is crazy, because Charles Oliveira is a huge star in his own right, but there's something now. This whole thing has captured the imagination, and you've got to give the UFC credit, because if this was boxing, they would have just phoned in some Latvian taxi driver or some, you know, bin man from Birmingham and being like, yeah, get him in the main event, it's fine, we'll pay him 50 pounds and we'll let the champion get a win at home. Yeah. But the UFC is not boxing, and it also speaks to the relationship that they have with Abu Dhabi and the amount of money Abu Dhabi must be paying the UFC to go there, because they're like, oh, we've got to open the old purse strings here and pay Volkanovski and pay Kamaru Usman as well, who equally should be applauded for going on short notice to go up in weight and fight Khamzat Chimaev, the man that nobody wants to face either in the co-main event. We'll come back to that one in a minute. But it just shows you, like, the UFC is arguably, in the space of like 48 hours, replaced its main and replaced its co-main and put together a better event than they had in the first place, which was already incredible on paper. It's just like they are just so far ahead of any other combat sports organization in terms of what they can do matchmaking and what they can do to keep the ball rolling. The show must go on, and they just find a way to make things work, and they've made it even better. It's not like, oh, sorry, there's nothing we can do about it. This is the fight game. We said, okay, you know what? Hold my beer. Here's have an Alexander Volkanovski. Have a Sambo killer. It's just like, oh, and you got to give credit to Makhachev to a certain extent for, because he went over to Perth to do that, and I get that. But you know, now Volkanovski's doing it on short notice, going into Abu Dhabi, where, let's be honest, the Dagestani clan are going to be able to do whatever they want in Abu Dhabi. That is their backyard. They are the chosen ones. They are the favorite sons of Abu Dhabi. Islam Makhachev is going to be the most hydrated man that has ever lived, ever. He's going to have 11 IVs coming out of his nutsack, just jamming him up with fluids.
Yeah, the only man who's actually hydrated in Yas Island. But yeah, man, it's what I think. It actually speaks not just to the relationship, obviously, that they have with Abu Dhabi, but the relationship they have with the fighters as well. Because obviously, if these fighters weren't getting remunerated for their efforts, they wouldn't be jumping in and potentially ruining their legacy and just getting Kamaru jumping in. He's lost very few times in his career, and he's still up there with one of the greatest of all time in the division, and he's taking a huge risk by fighting an undefeated fucking animal in Chimaev. So it's like,
he is, but it's a calculated risk, right? Because they're obviously they're paying him money. And the other crazy thing that we all knew this was a possibility, even when it was Paulo Costa versus Khamzat Chimaev, that the winner of this fight would likely jump Dricus du Plessis for a shot at the middleweight title. And it's already been confirmed. And this is what happens if you choose not to fight.
Yeah,
you don't push through and say, I'll go and take my opportunity. You're likely to get jumped in the queue by big names in big spots. And this is what's happened. And you know what? If Kamaru Usman goes up on short notice and fights at 185 pounds and beats Khamzat Chimaev, he bloody deserves that shot. He deserves that shot because of the legacy that he set. Even if it was a weight class down, he's shown time and time again that he is a great champion, and he deserves that opportunity. I think he'll lose to Sean Strickland. I actually think Sean Strickland, with his defensive wrestling, is a bit of a nightmare for Kamaru Usman's his size and the pressure he could put on him. But that aside, what a tremendous fight Kamaru Usman versus Khamzat Chimaev.
Yeah, dude, it's a dream. It really is, and I think we've all noticed that Kamaru's been huge for the division. You see him against Gilbert Burns; they don't look like they're in the same fucking division at all. It's like, not only is he bigger in stature, but like the amount of muscle mass that he still has on, and the amount of explosivity and everything in that fight was just it was so one sided from an eyeball perspective. Anyway. It's always been, I feel like a lot of people wonder what would they do if they just went up a division, and oftentimes, we don't get to see that happen. So it's nice to be able to see what this is like, and it shakes things up. It's not just we're gonna watch the same fights recycle over and over again. You know, Kamara's torn through that division over and over again. There wasn't really a huge want for him to come and face Leon again and have that cycle continue, right? No. This is a better timeline. This is more exciting.
This is definitely not the darkest timeline. And the other thing as well, obviously it's great when big fights get announced, but you got to wait for them. If UFC had have announced, like, oh, for International Fight Week next year, we're going to do we're going to do Volkanovski versus Makhachev 2, champion versus champion, something like that. They go, that's great, but I got to wait to July. We don't have to wait, man. It got announced, and it was like, yeah, it's in 10 days' time. We've just got to get through this Apex fight card. And, just about get there. And then we get this unbelievable card, which champion versus champion. It's just, what an absolute treat. What a beautiful, beautiful weekend of fights we've got in store, because it's just been absolutely incredible. And you know, there's some other really good fights on the card as well. I mean, in the light heavyweight division, you've got what is almost certainly a title eliminator with Magomed Ankalaev versus Johnny Walker. I think Ankalaev is ranked one or two, he's ranked two. Yuri Prohodka is going to fight Alex Pereira for the vacant belt. Mm-hmm. That's already been organized. Jamal Hill is not going to be back for a while. So yeah,
that's,
I mean,
that's the only thing I was wondering about is, like, you know, obviously Jamal Hill would be overranking these guys if they fought.
Yeah. Oh, he'll get the Yuri treatment. So immediate, because he's vacated, he'll get an immediate shot upon his return. But I don't think we see Jamal Hill back till probably late next year. Like a blown Achilles, man. That's
is that what they? Oh fuck yeah, no no yeah, yeah that's a while. Achilles,
yeah, he did it playing basketball. It's like, that's, what are you doing, man?
I mean, just tall people doing things with, like, you know, and the whole thing of just jumping explosively and landing and twisting, it's all just bad for all your bits. Like, every bit, if it's your knee, if it's your ankle, if it's your anything, if you're Tom Segura, it's also bad for your arm.
So it's one of the greatest videos of all time.
It's awful. I hate it. I hate watching it. I as much as I love watching people destroy each other in the cage and stuff like that, horrific injuries, I'm just, oh no, help.
Oh god, what an all-time video, man. What else we got in this card? So
I think Johnny Walker is gonna do something special. I think Magomed's amazing, he's so well-rounded. I reckon he'll probably just try to keep that distance, piece him apart from the outside, but I'm pretty sure Johnny Walker's power, he can touch, he's got the touch of death, man.
Super powerful guy, and he's incredibly athletic. His balance is out of control, and that's going to be a challenge that Ankalaev has to solve. And if he can't chain his takedowns together, because that's what you need to do against Johnny Walker, you got to fire one after the other. And if you can't wrap him up and get close to him, then in a striking match, Johnny Walker's gonna eat up Ankalaev, I think. So a really, really interesting fight. And yeah, good, you know, great to see Johnny Walker put it all back together after he went on that he had that great start to his MMA career. He didn't lose a fight for years. And then he peeled off three performances a night, and then he could barely buy a win. And then he's put it all together, man. He's peeled off three in a row, looked really good doing so. And yeah, good for Johnny Walker, man. It's nice to see.
Yeah, he lost 4 and 5 back in the day, and then now he's come back with a three fight win streak, and they've all been in like devastating fashion. So it's like, it's nice to see, because I mean, and obviously he was being a bit of a Michelle Pereira in the beginning. He was just doing wild shit, and like, but the thing is, he wasn't doing it in the cage. He was doing it after, and then when he's celebrating, and then the worm and dislocates his
fucking. Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought you were going to go a different route there with Michelle Pereira. I thought you were like, Johnny Walker's been running around with his Israel flag, and I was like, no, 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 Jamie, wrong kind of worms.
Oh, Jesus, no, I completely chose to ignore it. It's literally a week after Dana White said we're not doing flags. I bet he fucking regrets doing that. It's just like, oh man, now this is going to be divisive. This is the point. Like the point was to be able to represent your country and stuff like that.
It's hilarious. I can't wait. It's gonna be the flags at USC 294 are gonna be out of control.
I mean, if you can get them in, I mean, like, because people are gonna be I mean, like, obviously flying in. I don't know how big the Yaz Island arena is. Is it an arena or is it a stadium?
It's an arena, but I'm just talking from the fighters. Like, I need a bookmaker to give me odds that someone's going to walk out with a Hamas flag. Like,
it's there must be some kind of. I'm sure that there'll be like some security. But the thing is, you don't want to fuck up in the Middle East. Like, you know, if you're in a country that isn't your own country and like you're offending people or doing something wrong.
That's the greatest understatement of all time. You don't want to fuck up in the Middle East.
just don't fuck about with like somewhere where you're a guest. Don't piss people off. Don't do stupid shit. Don't do divisive shit. Just be nice to everybody.
If you're a journalist or you're a migrant worker building football stadiums for the World Cup, like if you're in either of those two categories,
Just try not. Be nice. Everybody love everybody.
Everybody love everybody.
So we got a lot of ovs on this card.
We've got a lot of ovs, evs, vovs, which is, you know, we got Makachev, Chimaev, Ankalaev, Aliskarov, Nurmagomedov, Gavarov, Mokaev. Who else have we got?
Naimov as well.
Yeah, Naimov.
And Magomedov. Let's keep running down the list. Nurmagomedov is going to be a fucking sick fight. I reckon.
He's like the shit Nurmagomedov, isn't he? He's like not the good one.
He's okay.
Yeah. But like he's not.
6-2.
But he's just happened. He's not related to any like the good Nurmagomedov like family.
The good ones.
Like he's not. He's just got the name. Yeah. I don't think he's related to Khabib.
He was the snotty kid down the street that your parents made you play with as a kid. Like, you know, you weren't actually your friend, but you had to, like, you know, just by default. Yeah. And then he's got the
same name. You gotta be nice to him. You know what'd be funny? That isn't his name, and he just changed it because he was just like wanting to fit in. He was just like a fanboy of Khabib and the rest of the clan growing up. That would be hilarious. But yeah, I'm pretty sure he's unrelated. But he's still like trained with them all. Like he's obviously from Dagestan. But it's just funny that everyone is just like, oh, it's Nurmagomedov. He must be absolutely brilliant. It's like, nah, he's all right. He's he's fine, but he's not at this like peak level. And he's fighting. I'll be honest. I don't know much about the guy he's facing.
I don't know much, and I don't even know how to say his name. So,
I don't know anything.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll see on the night. But I mean, like, he looks like a bit of a sometimes win, sometimes lose kind of guy. Yeah. There's a lot of guys, obviously, that are coming through on the UAE, Fighters League, mm-hmm. but the looks of it as well. So, you got Muhammad Yaha, who's his UFC debut, and he's coming off that division where he's had quite a bit of success, and obviously going up against someone who's...
Isn't Trevor Peak the absolute mong?
He came from Contender Series. I don't know if he's had a
guy that like throws those like upright hammer fists. I'm sure that's Trevor Peak. Is that him? He's like the trailer park fighter.
Oh right,
he had that fight with Chepi Mariscal. Like he absolutely sucked. He's got no technique. He's just a trailer park fighter.
Yeah, well, he lost his last. So he's had one fight in the UFC after Contender Series, and then he lost that with that. Yeah, exactly. And that's the one I was thinking. Yeah, you're right. Well, let's hope he does something more than Hemifist.
All the money on Muhammad Yaya to kill Trevor Peak. Main feature bout on the prelim card is going to be good. Tim Elliott versus Muhammad Makhachev. How Makhachev is able to fight again this year after the knee bar that he got put through by Jafal Filio was just unbelievable. And him and Tim Elliott, like, they're beefing with each other, but I think they have like a bit of respect with one another, but like not too much. So it's this should be a pretty interesting fight. And I like both of these guys. Tim Elliott is coming off a couple of nice wins. His only loss in his last five is to Mateus Nicolau, who's right at the top of the division.
Yeah. So
these guys, I think, rank 10 and 11. This is a real interesting fight.
Yeah, and if anyone, obviously, I think most people on the who's listening here, they would have watched the Kamaru Leon card. But I mean, that was when I believe when Mokaiva was.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Like, if anyone saw how long he was in that knee bar and how
his knee was like.
It was inverted. It was horrifying. I think most people just counted him out to be off for fucking years. But here he is again. Like, you know, just and he won that fight. So I mean, like, I'm astounded, honestly.
Absolutely ridiculous. And then just two more fights I want to point out, and I don't really need to go into detail. Nathaniel Wood versus Muhammad Naimov. That's going to be a good fight. Mm-hmm. Featherweight. Naimov coming off a good knockout win over Jeremy Mullarkey, and Nathaniel Wood is just an absolute beast. So looking forward to that one. And then mm-hmm. the we mentioned his name once, but Sharabuddin Magomedov is making his UFC debut finally against Bruno Silva, and it's like, okay, probably a bit of a gimme matchup here, but Magomedov, you would have seen photos of him, and A, that guy is definitely not clean, and B, he has got an absolute, like, he's got a shark eye. I don't know what's going on with his eye, but it's it looks horrific, and he's undefeated, and he's an absolute psychopath. He's been tested. He's not even had his first fight yet, and USADA's tested this bloke like 700 times.
Jesus. Yeah, I mean, I think if anyone's, like, you know, just scouted the YouTube reels or, like, you know, Instagram reels of just, like, you know, devastating fights and, like, crazy fighters and stuff like that, this guy has probably come up. He's, like, I've seen him in just, like, other organizations, just, like, he's a scary motherfucker. So it's kind of, it's amazing that he's making a UFC debut. And Bruno Silva isn't one to sleep on either, actually. His only losses have been to Alex Pereira, Gerald Meerschaert, Brendan Allen, like all brilliant fighters. The rest of them, you know, Jordan Wright.
And early on his career.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's sort of started out all right. And then, you know, he started fighting, you know, top level competition quite quickly. And then he's fallen off the thing. So, you know, obviously this is his chance to step up. But I think he's just going to get murdered, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. But overall, this is gonna be a great card. I'm so looking forward to this. It's just gonna absolutely slap. So,
I think you had a good segue in there actually, in terms of like the amount that this guy got tested, because now that you saw it is out. What's gonna happen?
That insane how that unfolded in real time as well. You saw just tweeting out, like, releasing statements that their relationship with the UFC is over, and everyone of course was. The reaction was absolutely incredible. Like, everyone online was like, this is terrible. It's a dark day for the sport. I'm like, hold on a minute. You were all watching the UFC before USADA. And now, and like, B, most of you don't even know what USADA is. The amount of, like, incorrect takes flying around was absolutely just incredible. But the UFC's already announced that they're doing, you know, they've parted ways with USADA for several reasons. And everyone's like, oh, no, all the fighters are going to be doing. No. What did you think was going on anyway? And USADA just kind of, like, were making everyone unhappy. The commissions didn't like working with them. The fighters didn't like them. Like, it's just a whole mess. And it was really interesting to see how the UFC responded. And, like, they had that whole hour-long press conference with Hunter Campbell and Jeff Nowitzki as well. And they were ready to go. It's not like they rustled up this new agreement in 24 hours. And I was like, well, Conor broke USADA. It's like, well, that was maybe the straw that broke the camel's back, but they were already getting ready to part ways with USADA. And I don't know how they're going to survive because...
Well, that was, what, 30% of their income?
30% of their business is the UFC. Imagine being the guy responsible for losing 30% of your company's business.
Yeah, that guy's not in that company anymore. But but they've already signed on with a new drug testing association, right?
It's just another... The thing is, USADA didn't set the policy. The UFC still set the policy, and USADA administered it. It's the same with this new organization. So... Anyway, let's see what happens. But I do think a lot more fighters are going to start testing positive because you've been able to do certain things where you start. Of course, dudes are going to still be on the gas and they're going to take their chance. And ultimately, testing is always behind what's going on. That's just the way it goes, because fighters, and especially those with more resources, are going to be looking for ways to push the envelope and get that competitive edge. But what a crazy, and that just came off the back of the whole UFC 294 news as well. It was like some of the wildest 48 hours in MMA news. It was awesome.
It's just crazy. And I bet Paulo Costa is fucking just hating the fact that he's not being able to fight right now. And as soon as USADA is done, I think he's probably the second most tested or something like that. Like, he's really high up there in terms of, like, the most tested athletes. And so he must be pretty glad that they're knocking on his door at 3 a.m. before a fight this time. He can just rest his elbow of whatever carpet disease he got. What's it called again?
I have no idea. It wasn't good. All right, before we get out of here, man, I've got a pressure. Who are you picking, Volkanovski or Makhachev?
Volkanovski, man, of course.
I think he's going to get it done.
I think he worked him out. You could see, I think what really got me in the last time was, like, you know, how frustrated he was that he didn't push out. Like, you know, everything about his loss the first time and afterwards, you watch him and he's like, I could have done more. He wasn't that strong. And I was like, I was too reserved at the start and I could have put more pressure on. All that being said, he's done nothing but think about what he can do better in all this time. Sure, he hasn't had the camp, but this guy's a fucking machine and a monster, and he stays in shape. He's always training. There's no way that he hasn't prepared mentally for this. I'm picking Volkanovski, as amazing as Islam is. Obviously, I can't.
But no, Volkanovski, we're talking with, like, what potentially, when it's all said and done, the greatest of all time versus a great fighter, and I'm going to pick the greatest of all time in Volkanovski. Let's go.
We got to do it. What's your pick for Usman Khamzat?
Oh, I think Khamzat Chimaev is going to absolutely flatten him.
You reckon?
Yeah.
You reckon? Oh.
I'm pretty sure.
Man, look, this is what I'm thinking of. He had so much trouble with Gilbert Burns. That was a fucking great fight, right? Gilbert Burns stood and banked, gave Khamzat the hardest fight of his career. Kamaru Usman did that times three to Gilbert Burns. He finished him.
That was that Kamaru Usman. That was quite a few years ago, and we're living in a different Kamaru Usman now.
This is the thing. I think the man's got zero knees, but he proves time and time again that he's a fucking winner. When he lost against Leon, he won that fight the entire fight. So I think we're sleeping on Kamaru Usman. I think it's a great bet to put someone Kamaru Usman to win this fight. It'll be an upset.
All right.
He's an underdog. He's an underdog. It's worth putting a bet on. That's all I'm saying.
He's a huge underdog, and I will be betting on Khamzat Chimaev.
We'll see you next week, motherfucker.
All right, man. Well, I'm on a short clock today, so let's wrap things up and. Tell the people what they need to know.
Yeah, just want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening as always, and getting your high quality content as you're always expecting. We really appreciate your listens. We appreciate your viewership. We're just happy to be able to do this. We love watching fights. We're fans as well as you guys. So, if you want to follow us at @punchdrunkpod with 2 D's on YouTube, @punchdrunkpod_ on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram @punchdrunkpod. You can follow Lewis at @LewisGloverMMA. If you look at him on Twitter or Instagram, he's a wild ride on Twitter. So it's always worth a bit of follow if you like a bit of banter and back and forth and a lot of content. You can follow me at Jamie Trezellian on Instagram as well. And we'll see you guys next week after this fucking amazing card.
Can't wait to talk about it. Peace.
Peace.